Good morning. On today's programme, we hear how Cameroonians forced to leave the United States could face abuse, torture and arrest. Also, simmering racial tensions in New Zealand as Maori MPs are suspended for performing the haka. But we start in Chad, as the UN this week raised the alarm over the deepening crisis there. Some 1.2 million Sudanese have found shelter in the eastern part of Chad, mostly fleeing violence in the neighbouring war. But a decision by the US to cut aid has significantly impacted on the humanitarian situation in Chad, which is one of the poorest countries in the world. Caitlin Kelly was in eastern Chad when thousands started to arrive, fleeing attacks in northern Darfur, and she has this report.
Everything was burning. Those are the words that echo among the Sudanese refugees arriving into eastern Chad in early May. In Tine, along the northeastern border with the war-torn country, over 40,000 people have arrived since April, fleeing deadly attacks in northern Darfur. Roya Abdullah tells me she left with nothing but the clothes on her back after her house was hit. Many describe running for their lives. A journey that often takes up to a week on foot with little to no food or water, the crossing into Chad offers a sliver of safety. At the Tine border, the scene is stark. One tent and a water point. In the 45-degree heat, the Chadian Red Cross and the UN Refugee Agency attempt to pre-register new arrivals, but the numbers are overwhelming. Many stumble across in urgent need of medical care, from gunshot wounds to dehydration. Most are women and children, unaccompanied, malnourished or severely dehydrated. One family left their thirsty mother sat by a tree en route. She never stood up again. The new arrivals recount harrowing stories of their journeys, of robbery and loss. Shadia Al-Naird lost her husband in the bombing of El Fasher. She moved on to Zamzam with her one-year-old son, Farid, arriving injured and shaken. Her husband, a doctor, was killed fleeing his clinic. "They shot him in front of me," she says, crying. Dozens more have stories like hers. Even on the way here, it all seemed unfair. One truck carried dozens of unaccompanied children. In just 1 week in Tine, roughly 150 unaccompanied minors crossed, as thousands have reported missing family. A small boy sobbed, realizing his mother wasn't there, as volunteers had to hold him from running back across the border to find her. Since Sudan's war erupted in April 2023, 1.2 million have crossed into Chad. At the peak of the recent influx, 6,000 people crossed in just 48 hours to Tine, fleeing deadly attacks in Zamzam and El Fasher. Humanitarians were caught off guard. With no transport to the transit camp, local Chadians ferry refugees, some of the same tribe. It's one of the many acts of generosity in a region with few resources, in one of the world's poorest countries. Those who reach the camp just 3 kilometres away sleep in the open desert under makeshift shelters of wood and cloth. Young children tell me they feel unsafe and cold at night. On one morning, thousands stampede for meagre portions of food brought by local kitchens. But the small bowls, distributed chaotically, barely scratch the surface of the needs. Dozens are knocked over in the scuffle. I've never seen people so hungry. With the Chad response only 13% funded this year, aid groups say they're making impossible choices. Unable to move people to more secure camps fast enough, thousands remain without food, water, or proper shelter in the 20,000-strong spontaneous site. Jacob Ishmael says he's been waiting for days for transport. He hopes to find at least some shelter from the blistering sun in Iridimi, the next camp. He cries out to foreign powers to show mercy to the Sudanese. Iridimi, where the UN is trying to relocate people, is an hour and a half away across the bandit-ridden Sahara. Jean-Paul Habamungu Samfura from UNHCR says he's deeply concerned. Cuts mean there's not enough staff, vehicles or supplies, made worse by the security need for military escorts. As the agency faces a 50% funding cut across the region, he says it's abnormal to leave people in such a state. In more established sites like Iridimi, new arrivals receive some support. Things like food, shelter and cash transfers. Medics say even locals are now turning to camp clinics, many also malnourished. As Sudan civil war enters its third year, the humanitarian crisis is worsening. More than 25 million face acute food insecurity. As aid workers say, the system is hanging by a thread. As fighting intensifies and refugees keep streaming into Chad, the UN raised the alarm this week at the Security Council. With the rainy season coming, Doctors Without Borders warn urgent prep is needed to ensure people get the bare minimum. They fear what will happen as 120,000 more are expected to arrive into Chad, raising huge concerns about disease and the spread of Sudan's cholera epidemic. Who's going to do it? Ask multiple humanitarians, unsure of the future, as Trump-era US aid cuts kneecap the response. This is Caitlin Kelly for World Report from Tine, Eastern Chad.
Next, we go to New Zealand. There, three Maori MPs have been suspended from its parliament for performing the haka during a vote last year. Government leaders have said the ceremonial Indigenous war dance was intimidating, but critics say the penalties are too extreme. They are among the most severe sanctions ever imposed on lawmakers in New Zealand. The controversy has highlighted simmering racial tensions in the former British colony. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
A fiery debate in New Zealand's parliament ended with two Maori MPs being suspended from the chamber for 21 days. Another was excluded for a week. They'd performed the haka without permission last November during a debate over plans to change how the Treaty of Waitangi, the nation's founding document, would be interpreted. The lawmakers received the toughest sanctions ever imposed on members of New Zealand's parliament. The centre-right government said the haka protest showed that Maori party leaders were extremists who treated democracy with contempt. However, the MPs said their unprecedented punishments were the work of a coloniser government and an attack on Indigenous rights. One of the main protagonists in this parliamentary drama is Wariri Waititi, the co-leader of the Maori Party. He brought a noose to the debate, insisting that the violence once inflicted on the country's original inhabitants by European settlers had been replaced by oppressive laws and policies. Waititi said that those in power had traded the noose for legislation. The firebrand MP has a traditional tattoo, known as a moko kanui, that covers his face. It's a powerful expression of cultural pride and unity, but it was ridiculed by Winston Peters, who's probably New Zealand's most controversial politician. He said his rival's tattoos were just scribbles on his face. These inflammatory comments were seen by his opponents and many other New Zealanders as crude and racist. Mr. Peters, whose father was Maori and his mother Scottish, was forced to apologise. His Indigenous background has not softened his long-standing criticism of Maori politicians, who he accuses of wanting anarchy in New Zealand. Winston Peters entered Parliament in Wellington in 1978. He left the Conservative National Party in 1993 to set up the populist New Zealand First Party. The 80-year-old has been its leader ever since. He's now the foreign minister in a Conservative coalition. It's led by the Prime Minister Christopher Luxon's National Party and includes New Zealand First. The most junior partner in the governing alliance is the Libertarian ACT New Zealand Party. Last year, it championed reforms to the Treaty of Waitangi, arguing that the document was outdated and gave too many privileges to Maori over other ethnic groups. Last year, campaigners took to the streets in their thousands to oppose plans to change how the treaty would be interpreted. They insisted the reforms would make Maori communities more disadvantaged. More broadly, Indigenous groups have argued that government policies have been an assault on their culture and self-determination. The measure never became law, but it's highlighted and inflamed deep divisions across New Zealand. Maori make up about 18% of New Zealand's population of just over 5 million. They suffer high levels of social and economic disadvantage. Critics argue that the current centre-right coalition government should be doing more, not less, to help them. The South Pacific nation is one of the most ethnically diverse countries in the world. A quarter of the population were born overseas. It is a multicultural success story, but relations with Māori remain fraught. New Zealand has been seen as a world leader for supporting Indigenous rights, but many fear that's now at risk. For World Report, this is Phil Mercer in Sydney.
And finally, the US administration's decision to end temporary protected status for Cameroon is forcing many thousands of Cameroonians who live in the United States to leave and return home. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem said that conditions in Cameroon had improved and it no longer meets the criteria for protected status. However, advocacy groups have warned that if people are forced to return home, many immigrants could face abuse, torture and arrest. Dirkus Ikupe has this report.
The U.S. Department of Homeland Security's decision to terminate temporary protected status, TPS, for Afghans and Cameroonians has sparked widespread concern among Cameroonians living in the U.S. and those in Cameroon. Yukfu Sivi, a resident of Bamenda, the chief town of the northwest region of Cameroon, said the region is not safe and is still experiencing war, and that it's sad that so many Cameroonians will be losing their temporary protected status. Bin Abil is another worried Cameroonian who has lamented that the people who have invested in the U.S. will not find it easy to just let go and start life afresh in a hostile environment. Ngwang Fiona, a Cameroonian who is based in the Far North region, which has been threatened by Boko Haram, says it is unwise for President Trump to terminate TPS, as many have fled due to natural disasters, which remains a concern. She adds that she was so emotional to hear the news because her aunt is resident in the U.S., but fortunately, her relative is a U.S. citizen. Abdul Said, a Cameroonian from the Far North region, says he has faced threats from terrorist groups and so empathizes with those said to lose their temporary protected status and return to Cameroon given the security concern that led them to leave initially. Shea Relindis, a resident of Cameroon's southwest region, has also expressed her anger over the news of Cameroonians losing their temporary protected status. Some news sources online, such as Semaphore News, say they have spoken to some of those affected by this decision who have expressed fear and worry. A Cameroon-based lawyer, Dr. Ban Kwamwa Limen, argues that while Trump has executive powers, according to Article 2 of the U.S. Constitution, there is still not sufficient peace in Cameroon, especially in the northwest and southwest regions. Barrister Kwamwa urges Trump to reconsider his decision. Many Cameroonians enter the U.S. under the temporary protected status due to the socio-political crisis that has been affecting the two Anglophone regions of Cameroon since 2016. Those affected claim they have invested in their lives in America, and losing TPS will mean starting all over. Several organizations in Cameroon have condemned the decision, calling it inhumane. They argue that stripping off stability and protection from about 7,900 Cameroonians would put them at risk of deportation to life-threatening conditions. Gustavo Torres, the executive director of Casa de Maryland, an immigrant advocacy organization, stated that Cameroonian nationals cannot safely return to their country due to armed conflict. He says the ongoing violence, human rights violations, and humanitarian crisis in Cameroon continue to place its citizens at severe risk. A cross-section of Cameroonians from all the 10 regions of the nation that has an estimated population of over 28 million inhabitants are now praying and hoping that Trump can change his decision, or the returning Cameroonians win the American lottery and return legally. In May 2022, the United States designated Cameroon for temporary protected status, enabling eligible Cameroonian nationals to stay in the country for 18 months. As a result, thousands of Cameroonians have been able to benefit from the program, which potentially offers a route to more stable immigration arrangement. With the loss of the temporary protected status on the way, there has been uncertainty, as the returning Cameroonians do not know what's next. For World Report in Mara, Cameroon, I am Dorcas Ikupe.
Well, that's it from World Report today. The programme was edited by Margaret Curley. If you want to listen back, You can go to rte.ie/worldreport or listen on all our podcast platforms. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, thanks for listening and take care.